Welcome to episode 59 of the Men Who Save Football at Dundalk FC Fancast. This is a post-match reaction to our 2-2 draw with Levadia Tallinn. Guys, was that a game which illustrated both the strengths and the weaknesses that are currently in the squad?
I think it probably was. Like, if you look at the fact that we lost Michael Duffy before kickoff, this is a team that is playing without, you know, previously its best player, Chris Shields. There was, I think, elements of the game that I think were very positive. I'd say, like, for certainly a long spell of the second half, we put them under, like, tremendous pressure. I think the first half was a bit chaotic from both sides, really. It wasn't just Dundalk, but, you know, it was end-to-end stuff. Like, nobody had control of the game. And the fact that there was four goals inside the first 25 minutes, like, isn't really a surprise because it was just, like, it could have been more. I think Abibi made a good save to tip a shot onto the post that otherwise was destined for another goal as well. So I think, like, there was some very good performances. Like, I think Daniel Kelly was a constant threat, even if sometimes, like, the odd decision he made could have been a little bit better. But, like, he definitely threatened them constantly the whole match. Will Patching, I think, was very good. Patrick McElhaney, I think, had a really an outstanding game. And yeah, I think at times, like, there was signs of real positivity. I think even people like Abibi again, like, I know he conceded two goals, but I think, like, in general play, he was actually very good. At one stage, there was a situation in the second half where he was sort of placed under a lot of pressure, had to shift the ball onto his left foot. Like, he played a nice chip pass to Dara Leahy, and we ended up going to the other end of the pitch and really threatening. Like, so I think his skill on the ball and his ability to pass it is with both feet, I think, is starting to become, you know, a noticeable aspect of his game that is rather good. And so, yeah, I think around the pitch, like, there was a lot to be positive about, and especially in the knowledge that, like I say, if you were putting two names on the team sheet, like, just a couple of months ago, it probably would have been Chris Shields and Michael Duffy. So to play reasonably well without them, I think shows, yeah, that there's, I think, some depth to the squad still, that there's a lot of quality still there, and that Vinny's doing a pretty good job in organising these players.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a mix of positives and negatives. One thing I would say, though, is I think we really felt the absence of Chris Shields. I mean, I think we played well, especially in the second half. They barely threatened us since only the very start of the second half and the very end of the second half. But in the middle, as Martin said, I think we completely bossed it. First half was absolutely chaotic. But I think, especially their second goal was put down. I mean, I just think we let them walk through the middle of the midfield. At times in the first half, they had the run of the midfield. And they were able to pass it about and no one was pressing them. That was a huge thing. They were able to pass around really easily, I felt, at times. And no one was putting any pressure on them. I think we really starting to see the absence of Chris Shields, because I think they had acres of space in the middle, especially for that second goal, which I think they came under very little pressure for. But I think, in a weird way, it was a very frustrating result, but also positive, because I think in the second half we played really well. I think we showed we definitely can take the tie. But also, I think we gifted them two goals that we shouldn't have conceded. That kind of old European madness mentality in which we seem to do so much right and then just mad, you know, I don't know, lapses of attention, lapses of pressure, and we gift them. I think it should have been a win. But that's both positive and negative to me, because there's the frustration that I think we should have won. But then also going into it, I wasn't very confident. I don't think a lot of people were very confident. I think, you know, we discussed that maybe it looked like Levadia Tallinn had improved on a few years ago. We definitely obviously have not improved on a few years ago. But that performance was much stronger than I expected. Some really good. I also thought Dave McMillan put in a really good shift. I mean, he's always rises to the game, I think, in Europe. I thought Dara Leahy continues, I think, to really, really grow. So lots of really good individual performances, some not so great individual performances. And I went away thinking that should have been a win. Thank God away goals no longer count, though, because I think that makes it far easier to stomach.
I think you're right. Yeah, the away goal is the big one. I noticed that last night. Like, imagine if you're one down and then they score another one. It's 2-1. I think the heads start to drop then at that stage because the away goals start to mount, and it's a completely different game when there's no away goals because the players can just, you know, reset. Like, as I said to you guys last night, nil all, we go, like, when we go over here, that's it. You're starting afresh and away you go. Some of the positives from tonight, and like, this is where, like, Irish clubs, I think, and what we have seen ourselves in Europe lacking is that not, remember you saying this before, Ken, not taking our chances, not being able to take our chances. So you get that chance and then, you know, you get bet 2-0 because we should have scored that and we should have scored another. And last night, Patchen's goal was brilliant. It was phenomenal. It just came back, bang, in you go. And they're the little things that separate, you know, the difference between a 2-0 loss and a 2-2 draw. And McMillan took his goal exceptionally well last night. There's no point in going over it again. The whole midfield, you know, until the second half was just like, it was a gaping hole. And, you know, I think they've had a more solid midfield there from the start, you know, possibly wouldn't have scored or conceded those two goals. But then on the flip side of that, you know, when you're pinned, with your backs to the wall, you know, we have to go, we have to score, and we did. We scored twice. So, like, if we look at the second half, you know, where we had the majority, we were the dominant side, we couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. And that'd be one fear I'd have for going over there next week, is that, like, they don't score early, we don't score early. You know, we have the majority of possession, and then we get nipped, like, with 2 minutes to go or 3 minutes to go, either in the first half or the second half. That'd be the only thing that I'd be worried about. But I think that if we start with the 11 that we finished and next week, I think that we'll definitely give them a run. And then the other thing as well, and it's mad because it just shows, like, we're, like, as you said to me, Ken, like, you put up in the group, that it's European football, and that we have that technical kind of midfield. I think European football suits us much, much better. I think, you know, it's just, you know, because we're given the space, we can get the ball, there's nobody high pressing us and running around like terriers after us, chomping at our ankles. Like, it's not, you know, it's not League of Ireland where, you know, you're getting pinned down all the time. And I think that's when our players can really, really shine. So, yeah, I think there was lots of positives to take from last night. Probably the big negative was probably, like, you know, individual player performances, which is, I'm sure we'll chat about as well. But I enjoyed it as a spectacle. And I think neutral fans as well, I think after watching that first half, were thinking, wow, that this is going to be it. This is going to be a serious cracker of a second half. And then as Dundalk fans, we were able to sit back after we got over that dodgy spell in the first couple of minutes of the second half, and then, you know, enjoy our possession and our dominance of the game.
You all hit on the point of Chris Shields. And one of the comments that was made about Chris, I think it was by a Bohemians fan, it might have been on Twitter, was that he is the type of player that Bohemians fans would love to have in their side, because he's the type of player that stops you conceding goals, particularly late in the game. Now, we didn't have to wait to start conceding goals. I mean, the frustrating element of the performance was that Livadia got their goals without really having to work all that hard for them. I mean, very, very early in the game, suddenly our right flank just seemed to be, you know, overloaded by Livadia players who strolled into the box, simple centre and a simple unchallenged shot on goal to slot it away. And that really rocked us back. Now, in contrast, a positive was our instantaneous response. Really good attacking play, a really delicate finish from Will Patching. Well, not delicate in that he got plenty of force behind it, but it was also placed with precision after really good work from Daniel Kelly. And you realise that these were two teams that were perhaps defensively vulnerable. I mean, Lavadia's keeper looked quite dodgy. And their defence, while, you know, doing that thing that Martin loves, which is insisting on playing out from the back, it seemed to work for them again and again, particularly in the build-up to the second goal. I mean, their second goal came from 8 consecutive passes, I think 4 of which were in their own box. And I think it was at the moment that that second goal went in that we really saw the value of Chris Shields. That goal would not have been scored with him in the Dundalk side, because I think it was mentioned in the paper, and I know Wilfred Zahibo has come in for quite a lot of personal criticism as regards his own performance. I think some of that is justified, because although Wilf did have a role in the build-up to the second goal, where he plays this superb long-range pass out to the right, just that leads to our second goal, the David McMillan goal. we saw the difference between the best defensive midfielder in the league that Chris Shields has and somebody who has come in from another league, has yet to acclimatise and has yet to attain match fitness. And whereas Wolf, I think it was probably overlooked on the night because of his inability to sort of be that defensive shield. His passing, although usually pretty conservative, going sideways and backways, it usually is pretty technically good. He doesn't tend to concede the possession or turn it over all that much. But what was abundantly obvious, I think, to any objective observer is he did not have the mobility to get around and cover those gaps that were opening up as Levadia sort of began to put their passes together and create chances. And time and again, he wasn't able to track. Now, whether or not that is down to, I think Vinnie Pertis made reference to international duty and quarantine and all of this sort of stuff. But we have a situation where, you know, Dundalk's defensive fragility, it really isn't all that much of a mystery. We've sold the best defensive midfielder in the league, and we have replaced him not with a like player. We've got, you know, a couple of options there. And one of the unfortunate things was with Michael Duffy's absence, it sort of disrupted the midfield a little bit, because when I was watching the Finn Harps game and we had that midfield trio of Patching, McElhenney and Stanton, you were looking at them and you were thinking, these guys are all very suitable for European football. They're all very technical players. They have a good first touch. They have a good passing range. They very rarely turn the ball over. And all of that is kind of what you hope to have and what you really require to make headway in Europe. The only perhaps downside of that midfield is they are all a little bit similar and there may not be all that much pace in them or that type of running that will get you goals. Our midfield, while technically very impressive, doesn't look like there is going to be a free scoring player in that midfield. Perhaps maybe Will Patching will be, but in the way that like Richie Towle has already begun to score goals again on his return, we perhaps don't have a player that quite that potent going forward. But with Duffy's absence, we had to change the midfield a little bit, and it was either going to be Sloggett and Zahibo coming into that defensive midfield role. And I think I was talking to a few people before the game and we were talking about the probability of Zahibo finally emerging as a force and making himself a hero for Dundalk. But unfortunately, it wasn't his night, was it?
No, and that was the thing. A few people beforehand were, I think there was genuine excitement at seeing what Wilf might be able to do. And I know obviously we're going to talk about, obviously there's been comments and criticism and there's criticism from the crowd of his performance. And I think, I mean, he didn't have a great game. And the other thing I think is you could see the turnaround in Dundalk when Greg Sloggett came on. Now, one thing we could say is let's give Sloggett his dues, okay? So when Greg came on, definitely I think that period of dominance from about 55, 60 minutes on coincided with that change in midfield. I mean, people could argue otherwise, but that's my observation of what happened. The first half, I think we looked very weak in the center of midfield. I mean, he was passing really good, and he's definitely a technically gifted player. There's definitely a lot of potential there. I think the big frustration, and I mean, I was at the game, and you could feel it from the crowd, was lack of effort. Now, we could put this down to lack of effort, or as you suggest, maybe a lack of match fitness or match readiness, and that's something we could talk about. So if we're not going to question his motivation or his effort, we can definitely observe that his pace was off. I mean, that's undeniable. And I think the pace being off was a big factor in their second goal, because I don't think he did the job he was supposed to do. I don't think he did the job that Chris Shields would have done, criticise performances. And I don't think he had a very good game, and he was off the pace. I mean, why that is? You know, and we could say, you know, the international quarantining and all this kind of stuff has contributed to that. But that then raises questions about what's going on at higher levels in the club, where we're losing players who can play that role to a high standard each week. And we're replacing them with players who have this kind of, well, they have to go off on international duty and we know they're going to have to quarantine and they have to acclimatise to the league. So a decision was made there to replace one player with another, effectively, And we saw the fruits of that last night, especially in that first half.
I think that, like, yeah, he was definitely off the pace last night. When I seen him against Rovers in Tala, I could see some real potential. Like, I mean, obviously, I can't remember scouting. Like, the guy has real potential, you know what I mean? You don't play at the levels he's played and come through, you know, the teams he's played without having, you know, serious potential. And he has. I thought last night really would have suited him. I was excited to see him in the starting lineup. I was thinking, like, okay, he'll do something different tonight because it's Europe and that style will suit us. And then I was really shocked at his performance. I thought that he looked, you know, like, you've been very diplomatic, Rory, when you say, you know, that he was like a little off the pace. He looked lazy and he looked actually like, you know, like he didn't care. If he was ill, I mean, if Vinny had come out at the end of the match and said, look, he actually was suffering, you know, with some form of illness, I think we would have all went, yeah, okay, and now I get it, because, you know, like the second goal, he's just standing there and he's just watching you, man. You know, there's no, you know, no desire to tackle. Like, if that was Chris Shields, he would have been, you know, in from the side, ball whipped out. And if he had a tip with them dog man out too, he would have. You know what I mean? Whereas Will just kind of, you know, stood and watched. I'm not big into, I think, you know, abusing players is pointless. I mean, it's absolutely shit. What are you achieving when you do that, whether it's at the side of the pitch or whether it's, you know, online? I think online is really stupid, because that's just, you know, it's just, I think it's a brain fart that you weren't able to control, and you post it online. And, you know, it says more about you as a person when you abuse somebody online than it does about the person themselves, no matter for what. But I was disappointed for him as a player last night, and I was really disappointed for us and Vinny for picking him, and then for him just to be completely and utterly, you know, just disappointing, you know. And I'm sure maybe he's not disappointed with his performance last night. He's picking up his wage, he's got his line on fee. I think that's the other thing, the other side of it, when you look at it from behind the scenes, because it leads right back up the chain, where, you know, the discussed sign on fees huge, you know, he's on a wage, and he's not really given, you know, all that on the pitch. And they're the nights you want him to be given on the pitch.
Yeah, I think this is the crux of the problem, right? So part of a discussion I had on Twitter afterwards is that, you know, we have regularly said on this podcast that it takes players like quite a while to acclimatize. And we noted just a couple of weeks ago that Wilfred has had a particularly difficult sort of onboarding into the team, where he came in late, he's been away on international duty, he's had to quarantine like a couple of times. So it's no surprise if he hasn't acclimatized, you know, particularly well in that period, and hasn't been given, you know, the same amount of time as other people. And looking at people like, for example, Patching and Abibi, like, it's clear that they've shown a big uptick in form after being given a bit of time to settle into the league. But, you know, fair is fair, it was pointed out to me in this conversation that neither of them came in with a profile, like, they were prospects that were there to, you know, sort of develop, and they have developed over time. Whereas Zahibo has come in as somebody who had a big profile beforehand, was meant to be, you know, sort of ready-made, ready to go, drop into the team, you know, sort of element of quality. And right now he's not showing that. And I don't know if that's Wilfred's fault, or if that is, you know, as you said, the club hierarchy and their transfer policy and things like that. It certainly put the spotlight on him, which is, you know, maybe unfortunate. But right now, I think he's not delivering, like, according to the expectations that people have. Now, at the same time, I think it's fine to critique his performances. But, you know, we've said as well that, you know, venturing into personal abuse and stuff like that is not on. And, you know, sad as I am to say it, like, there has been a bit of a problem with that. Like, it was only last year when Nathan Adua was the subject of some racist criticism from people who were, I don't know if we'd call them fans of the club, but certainly, you know, sort of associating themselves with the fan base. And that's really sad to see. And I don't think we want to see anybody venture down that kind of path again. So I think there's still room to critique his performance, though. And that's absolutely fair. And last night, I think, as Rory said, the game really changed when Greg Sloggett came on. And I think that was a really notable turning point. Now, at the same time, I don't think Wilfred was the only person who had a poor performance. I think Jurkovskis for the first goal, and a couple of other chances as well. Like, I think in some ways he has so much pace. He sort of, you know, thinks to himself that he can venture forward and leave a bit of room in behind, and he'll just make up the difference. But at a certain level, I think maybe last night exposed it. Like, when you're playing against players of other pace, you don't have that much room to get away with it. And we did not get away with it. And I think to a degree as well, Andy Boyle had one of his less good games in a Dundalk shirt for a while. Like, there was a lot of sort of misplaced passes and things that, you know, sort of trickle out over the sideline as he wasn't sort of expecting to receive the ball. I think the goals that we conceded, himself and Jurkovskis don't seem to have that partnership right now where they have a sort of, you know, unconscious understanding of where one another are. And I think that's definitely something that could be improved upon for the second leg and for games to come as well.
I think to avoid singling out anybody, I think the duality of the game was even embodied in single performances. Like, for example, I thought Patrick McElhinney, since he's moved more centrally and a little bit deeper, I think he's been really good for us in recent games. And I thought he was really good again for most of last night. But at the same time, you know, the inconsistency that was there in the team performance was also sometimes there in his own. There was moments when, you know, players had found space wide left and right of Patrick and seemed to be, you know, the ball was on to play them into dangerous attacking positions. But uncharacteristically, Patrick's passes were overhit on a couple of those occasions. And that was really strange because we know that he has that capability to be very, very precise in his passing. So I thought he kind of embodied in one player the sort of the very good and the not so good performances that we had generally. I just think both teams were a little defensively open. It made it a very exciting game. But it's also frustrating knowing that when we were a little bit more disciplined and a little bit tighter and more organized at the back, that was a game that we really could have seen out. And I think, you know, to come back just to finish off on the Zahibo thing, I know, you know, football fundamentally for fans, it's an emotional experience. And yes, given the profile he has and given the reported salary and signing on fee, people were expecting perhaps, you know, Paul Gascoigne merged with Maradona when this guy arrived. And that's not the type of player he is. You can look at his showreel and he's much more of a Michael Carrick or Tim Sherwood than a Diego Maradona. That's just the reality of the type of player he is. I would give him the benefit of the doubt. And although this may look, I'm trying to learn from perhaps what we thought initially of Will Patching and also Sam Stanton, who perhaps were not, you know, players that really impressed in their initial periods at the club and now look to be much better than perhaps we initially thought they were. A fully fit Sahibo with much more minutes under his belt could perhaps be a lot closer to that defensive midfielder that you need. Now, unfortunately, the season is well advanced. Time is running out. Whether or not Dundalk would be able to afford him for a second season is very much in doubt. But I think, you know, if there is blame to be apportioned, I mean, the club should have known that this guy is going to arrive without a pre-season, well into the season. He's not going to be match fit because he hasn't played for a long period. He will have his form disrupted by international duties requiring quarantine. All of this was there, transparent, in the open before they signed the contract or offered him the contract. So once again, it seems to be yet another instance whereby the recruitment policy, you know, for a player, a position that we weren't short of staff in, I mean, it just seemed to be once again a bizarre signing to kind of go all guns blazing at considerable investment in a position where we already had the best player in the league that you would be playing week in, week out if you had the opportunity. To me, it all roads lead back to the boardroom and the carnage of the last transfer window. And, you know, I just think they're ultimately in Europe. You the consequences of your preparation come home to roost. Now, I think we've done pretty well for a squad that has recruited poorly, lost a lot of quality, and also only has brought back in a proper manager in the last month. I thought the performance was all good given those circumstances. But it brings us back to the larger question that, you know, I don't think it's right to pillory a player as an individual person. I don't think that's ever right, really. But I think if I was to offer some sort of defense of Wilfred, I think he is not match fit. Look at the minutes that he's played. They're minuscule. You know, he just hasn't had enough football to really be at a level whereby he can show us his best stuff. And perhaps there is a much better player in there, but it's highly doubtful whether we'll be able to keep him long enough to see that player emerge. But to me, you know, the abuse, you need not direct it at him. I think the circumstances that Wilfred finds himself in are not entirely of his own making. And the club has probably just not thought through the implications of signing a player who's got international duty on another continent and has missed a pre-season.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I mean, I can't speak to, you know, the social media abuse. I haven't seen any of that last night. But in the crowd, I think the frustration was, I mean, that's all very well possible, but lack of match fitness and preparedness. But it translated, I guess, to the crowd as lack of effort. And I think it was that raw, I think from the crowd anyway, it wasn't abuse, it was frustration that was building. And it was frustration at the perceived lack of effort. I mean, that's definitely, there was the feeling in the stadium. Just really raw frustration that they, especially for that second goal, that tackle wasn't put in. And we're now, you know, 2-1 down, and it was preventable, and, you know, other players would have prevented it. And then, I mean, the other thing is the kind of ironic cheer when Wilfred was substituted was totally born, I think, out of frustration. And somewhat justified in that Sloggett really did contribute to the turning of the game. So I think part of it was that, yeah, that it's just this frustration. And as Martin has said, and you've said, comes with this massive reputation, comes with a considerable financial burden, huge amount of expectation. It was raw in front of everyone last night. The gap in expectation and reality. And that was manifested, especially in the crowd, as just kind of, to me, it was like, it wasn't abuse last night in the stadium. It was just standard frustration. But I do think, ultimately, he as a player has been put in an awkward situation. For all the reasons that you've outlined, an interesting question for me will be who will start in the away fixture, because I think, forget about, you know, criticism of Wilfred Zahibu, I think Greg Sloggett has made the argument for him to start. I think the footballing argument was made for 40 minutes yesterday that Greg Sloggett should start.
If we can just turn to the actual event itself, there seems to be a kind of a, some people have mentioned it, that there was a major disparity between, you know, the Bohemians event in the Aviva Stadium where they played Starnham, got 6,000 in. For their second leg tie against Doudelange, looks like they're going to get 8,000 in the Aviva. Do you find it a little bit curious that, you know, Bill Hulsizer insisted that Dundalk play in the Aviva at increased expense when no fans could attend, but now Tala is good enough when you could have 8 times as many fans in the Aviva? And also the kind of the less than optimal promotion and organization of the game in Tala. Do you think it's kind of a little bit weird that Bohemians can get 8,000 into the Aviva while we struggle to get 1,000 into Tala?
No, I don't. I don't think that's strange at all. I think there's just been too much made of that. Like, it's like saying, you know, like both are from Dublin. You know what I mean? And as I said before, Dublin is the biggest population in the entire island. Like, I mean, somebody skipping across town to go to the Aviva just to see their team playing. You know, I don't get the big hoo-ha about that, to be honest. Well publicised, and, you know, like I read comments from Bo's, you know, supporters online saying, like, you know, they don't know when the last time was that they were in Lansdowne Road, and, you know, so like they're reveling it, they're loving it, like, you know, like the Aviva, Lansdowne Road, like, has been like a second home to us, as has Tala over the last few years. So no, I don't see what the hoo-ha is on the question of Bill. Look, Ken, that's just, you know, and not your question. I mean, what the fact is, what that man's just, he's, you know, he hasn't a clue. I mean, like, it's paper cutouts or cardboard cutouts in the Aviva and all sorts of stuff. Like, you know, I'm surprised he didn't, you know, look for Thomond Park or, you know, Turner's Cross, maybe. You know what I mean? The man's just, he hasn't no notion whatsoever what's going on. So, I mean, like, that doesn't surprise me either. Yeah, like, I didn't go to the game last night, like, for family commitments and other stuff. And I'm sure there was lots of people like that as well. The Shamrock Rovers fan even pointed out online that, you know, it's a 3-hour round trip. And it's, and that's if traffic's with you. And then, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic still, by the way. So, you know, running buses is people that don't have their own cars. People don't want to travel on public transport. Then you're running buses and people don't want to be on buses. So, like, I think there's a lot of things at play over the game, you know. So I think that, yeah, I can understand people questioning it, but to me personally, I don't see what the big deal is about. And I know that there was other issues as well. I'm sure the lads will come in a minute, but yeah, it would have been great to see more people there. But I think in the current scenario, in the current situation, you know, with COVID, with the fact that, you know, Tala is so far away as well. No, I don't see, and that opens up a whole other can of worms than about our own ground and stuff like that too. But yeah, no, I don't see that as much of an issue, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I mean, I don't think anything you said is a curious, and then you mentioned Bill. I don't think anything Bill does is curious at this stage. There's no curiosity there. I think Damien hit some really important nails on the head. Like, I don't care what Bose do, to be honest with you, right? And that's the other thing is, it is the first time in ages for them. They are a Dublin-based club. You know, happy for them, great. Whether or not we should have had more numbers or blah, blah, blah. Now, we only had 1,000 seats, okay? And as Damien pointed out, there is still a pandemic going on. So I would say cool head should prevail on this. I mean, for me personally, I live in Dublin. And I wasn't going to go until last minute because of public transport. I mean, COVID numbers are quite high. Don't fancy a 40-minute trip on the Lewis, to be honest with you. So there's caution in everyone. Now, I got the opportunity for a lift and that kind of stuff. So I was cautious about attending the game, and I'm near enough relatively to the stadium. So I think that plays on people's mind. 3-hour trip. I'm not going to lay too much into the club over a little bit of the fiasco over the ticketing, but what I would say is the lack of promotion. And I think that hits closer then to maybe people who are supposed to be football directors, if you know what I mean, and that level of stuff at the club. There was a shocking lack of promotion of this upcoming. If you remember back in the last few years, I mean, European tickets were, you know, Willy Wonka's golden ticket to get because everyone wanted to go. But everyone had their ticket a week in advance of the game. And you knew what you were doing a week later, and then you could arrange for transport and stuff like this. But to kind of drop it, you know, on a Tuesday saying, oh, by the way, there's 1,000 tickets for Thursday. And, you know, as Damien is saying, that people have family commitments. For people in Dundalk, it's you're not just jumping on a tram to get to the game. You have to arrange getting there and getting back quite late because it's an 8 o'clock kickoff. I mean, that was always a thing, by the way, even pre-COVID. A lot of family and friends of mine would always say, yeah, I'm going to the game, but they've got work and kids at school in the morning or stuff like this. And you're getting home after 11. So going out to Tala is not a great situation for a lot of people. Add on top of that COVID, add on top of that complete lack of build-up by the club. And I think you had this perfect storm for... now, in the end, I thought the crowd was quite healthy. I thought the atmosphere was great. It was really, really great atmosphere for the conditions. And it's great to see lots of familiar faces. But I think it was a perfect storm of issues that go back to us not having a suitable ground, to COVID, to really shocking lack of promotion by the club or really late in the day, has led to this kind of this scenario.
Yeah, I think the promotion is a problem. Like, if you were just considering the amount of buzz that there is, you know, about the two games, you would say that, like, there is a lot of, you know, chatter and stuff like that about Bose at the moment, who are approaching a high point, you know, relative to their performance over the past few years. And at the same time, it seems like Dundalk is sort of a club that's heading in the other direction a little bit, like after having so many years of sustained success, now we're in a slight downturn. But like there's ways and means to address that, you know, through hard work and doing lots of promotional work and things like that. And it doesn't really feel like that's happening at the moment. Now, I think there is still a lot of hard work done by the people at the club in terms of, you know, obviously we had to produce a mechanism for buying these tickets in the first place, for like securing the ground in the first place, like one that's not our own. And I'm sure there was plenty of work behind the scenes to do that. But as Rory points out, just in terms of actually creating that buzz in the first place, like that is something that clearly did not happen, and led to, I think, quite a lot of, you know, empty seats that they could otherwise have been filled. But worth calling out, I think that the people who were there as well made a tremendous noise. Like it was very evident to me on the feed watching it, particularly in the second half, like that they really got behind the team, and even the commentary team, you know, sort of, I think praised everybody there for creating, I think, a really good atmosphere despite the small numbers.
I don't know. I think I'm a little bit harder on this point than you guys may be, because I mean, if we just turn to Twitter for some commentary, Kieran Burke from Between the Stripes podcast has commented that Dundalk failing to sell 1,000 tickets for a European game tells you what a state the club is in behind the scenes. So many good people involved there, but it just appears to be totally lacking in structure. Jerry Malone has observed as well, attendance tonight is 700, Dundalk failed to clear their full 1,000 allocation. And I think Daniel McDonald as well has basically said pretty much the same thing. He says, it's fair to say that organisational issues that stopped Dundalk selling the limited allocation shows how behind-the-scenes operations are really affecting things. Not the fault of the overstretched people working hard, more so a reflection of all the people who have left or were allowed to leave. And what I kind of, what the reason I refer to the Bose game is, you know, I mean, yeah, okay, they're within the city, they can get to the Aviva, they haven't been there for a while, but it seems strange to me, and I know there's COVID, which is a factor. It just seems strange to me that Dundalk can bring 12,000 fans to a cup final, but now we have struggled to sell out 1,000 in Tala. And I mean, Tala, yeah, it's a journey, but it's not exactly like going from, you know, Cork to Dublin or anything like that. I mean, you've got a motorway basically door to door. I just think that, you know, although the environment is not optimal with COVID going on, and perhaps, you know, we have had more big days out, so there's a sort of law of diminishing returns with more casual fans. I just think, you know, you seriously have to look at the fact that you were unable to buy a ticket for this until about, what, 48 hours before the game. And news of transport to and from the game was only announced the day before. And then, you know, you had to kind of, you had to, you know, attend in person and pay in cash, and it just seemed that there was unnecessary barriers put up to getting more fans into the stadium by really not being on the ball. And I suppose that the main thing was that the fact that tickets were not available until very shortly before the actual match day, and also, yeah, the promotion, there was no buzz created. There was, you know, there was even, like, basically, you've got to build a little bit of hype to just raise awareness that this game is taking place. I mean, the fact that, you know, schools are out, I would have thought that we would have got more of, you know, more people there. And I just think, you know, it's sort of, we have often talked about the, you know, the off-field situation and how expertise has been lost to the club, particularly from the volunteer staff. And I think, once again, you're seeing the consequences of that. And this kind of brings us, it might be a good point to bring in the Gary Rogers interview on LOI Central, where he basically more or less repeated Dane Massey's line that, you know, the off-field chaos, the peak six effect, or the hull-sizer effect, you might call it, whereby players were thrown into, you know, the dark as regards communications and the club's intentions, contractual uncertainty. This all had a corrosive, demoralizing effect. And we saw that in our league form. And he said it was a factor that made him think, all right, I'm not enjoying this anymore. I'm not enjoying being at this club. And it was one of the factors which pushed him to retire, you know, this season rather than go another season. And he used a line which was uncannily similar to Dane Massey's. He said, "This Dundalk didn't seem like the club that I had signed for anymore. It seemed like a different club." And I think that's kind of at the back of the issue about attendance with me. It just seems that, you know, whereas you look at Bohemians and there is a good energy about them, and they seem to be growing a fan base, growing an enthusiasm. There seems to be a strong bond between players, management, like the alignment of player management and fans and the wider community and the club administration. They all seem to be in alignment in the way that ours was under the previous regime. And now that alignment has been broken, whereby most of the fans resent the ownership. the ownership have alienated volunteers, and as a result, the club doesn't quite function, and nor is it as kind of valued in the community, nor are we attracting ultimately the more casual fans to the big occasions. So I think it's a sort of it's a barometer of where we are as a club. And I think it is bad news that we could not fill out a 1,000 seat allocation for a second round European tie. And the unfortunate thing is, I think we're back to the same immutable problem. I don't know if Peak Six have the modesty to observe the damage they're doing and learn from it. I don't know if you can learn when you are of that mentality, or indeed, you know, when you're of the chairman's vintage. I don't know if this is a guy who's capable of looking at the consequences of his actions and seeing that they've led to bad consequences and changing his actions. I don't know if that's going to happen. So that's the eternal problem that kind of lurks around in the background. And that really is sort of, I think, behind the fact that the game wasn't as well attended as it should have been.
I think Bowls are doing something like really, really special. And I talked about that, I used that word before, special. Like, we could have done something exceptionally special here as and be the largest provincial, you know, club with decent facilities. Because like you look at Bowls, they're the heart of Dublin City. Like it's taken them a long time, I think, to actually, I'm not going to belittle it. What they're doing is really, really good. And I said this before, Metal was on the cast or to you guys, they have the potential to be the biggest club in the country. I know that Tallaght's got 10,000 seats. They're taking all the different angles. I think the people involved, you know, they're genuinely of that kind of bohemian kind of, you know, thing. Okay. So I think they're doing something that's really unique. And I think they definitely do have the potential to be the biggest club in Dublin, because they seem to be building and building slowly. Whereas we're completely going backwards. Like, going back to the Gary Rogers thing, and he said, like, this isn't the club that he signed for. So he's kind of thinking, okay, I think now's the time just to hang up the boots and go. I bet your bottom dollar that's why Chris Shields went as well and went mid-season. I'd say if Patrick McElhenney could go mid-season, that's it. I think the bottom line is, Ken, the owners don't care. And I think that is, and I not only did not care, they don't know what they're doing. And because they don't know what they're doing and they're out of their depth, they've thrown all this money at it. And obviously in their experience, money fixes everything. So you just throw money at stuff and, you know, money just, you know, papers over the cracks and stuff. But it's not really the case here. And I know people probably don't want to hear that, but I don't think that they actually care whatsoever. Like, you know,
this. Well, I know that's been said before, and it's been said before in this podcast. I actually think it's a little bit worse than that. I mean, I think they may care. Perhaps they do care. But what they lack is not caring. I think what they lack is wisdom. They have zero wisdom. They have no wisdom. They have no respect for wisdom. They have no respect for experience in the league or expertise in the league, because they have decided on a course of action. They've been told by lots of people this isn't a good idea, and they've arrogantly gone on ahead and done it anyway. And I know we might be getting into a familiar rant that we've often had, but I think what they lack is wisdom, and what they have in conspicuous supply is arrogance. So rather than not caring, I think they probably do. Like, in fact, they may care too much. Bill seems obsessed with believing that he has a role to play on on-field affairs, and this has led to a lot of damage being done. But ultimately, the effect is they have toxified the atmosphere of what was previously complete harmony, and they have created a situation where club stalwarts like Gary Rogers, you know, decides to retire from football just to extricate himself from that environment. Chris Shields, absolute stalwart of the club, decides that he'd rather play in another league. Patrick McElhenney wants to go home. Now, you can look at these isolated cases and say they're all personal decisions. Gary Rogers is, you know, he has had a long career. He would be retiring perhaps in the next couple of years anyway. But Gary Rogers is now coaching with Drogheda United. Why isn't he coaching with Dundalk, where we need? And this is no reflection on our current goalkeeping coach, because Alessio is making progress. But like a player of Gary Rogers' profile, you would hope to keep around the club. Steve Williams also, you know, coaching elsewhere. I mean, it seems that anybody who can is now inclined to leave. And that kind of leaves the club with what kind of future, you know, when your quality players feel that this, quote, isn't the club that they joined, or that the atmosphere isn't right, it's not a happy place to be. We all know what the origin of that is, what the cause of it is. And although Vinny has come back and he's putting things right on the field of play, brings us back to the question of, you know, when you've got this toxicity that has seeped through the club, a lot of people have presumed that Peak Six will depart at the end of the season. I think that there might be a worse outcome there. I think, what if they decide to stay? What if this becomes a permanent fixture or semi-permanent fixture in the way that Dundalk FC operate, whereby, you know, to work in Dundalk, well, you must be willing to tolerate a certain level of toxicity. You know, players, generally speaking, are not going to do that unless they're only motivated by money. So you will end up, you know, driving ambitious, you know, hungry young players, the type of players that Stephen Kenny's squad was composed of. You will drive them away, or you'll not be able to attract them to the club because you'll have a reputation of being toxic. I'm pretty sure that, this is my own personal opinion, that Richie Tyrrell would have been a shoe-in to come back to a non-toxic Dundalk, having had such a great time here. But went for Shamrock Rovers. He was diplomatic about it because often these players are trying to build a relationship with their new fans while not alienating their old. So he didn't say much about Dundalk, but reading between the lines, you know, he would have asked around. He would have said, all right, Shamrock Rovers at Dundalk, which one is on the up? Which one is the better bet for me as a player? The answer could only have been from anybody who objectively told him, well, Dundalk have been a basket case for the last year, whereas Shamrock Rovers are a steady ship and they seem to be on the up, and they've just picked off a few of Dundalk's better players in the transfer window. So I'm pretty sure that it was the culture of off-field affairs that cost us Chris Shields, cost us another contract for Patrick McElhenney, cost us the return of Richie Tell, and may go on to continue to cost us for as long as Peak Six hang around.
And an interesting development, which has just broken this morning with regards, I suppose, the ownership, the club, and the direction of the club. We've just been talking about the labour involved of going to Tala, not having our own stadium, having to pick between the Aviva and Tala. And it's clearly a massive problem with Oriel Park not being fit for UEFA standard games. Well, it's just kind of news has broken as we were kind of recording this morning that there's been an establishment of what's known as a Stadium and Facilities Redevelopment Group, which is focused on developing a Category 3 stadium and supporting facility as a centre of excellence for sport, entertainment and business in the Northeast. I'm just quoting directly from them there. So basically, some Dundalk FC associated people, some local politicians and some local business people have formed, a working group to establish a Category 3 stadium being built. So the council, the national government will be engaged with this group. So there's a statement here, a quote from Jim Magilton. So looks like a mixture, I guess, of local business people, local politicians, the club are forming a working group to see can a Category 3 stadium be built.
Okay, well, you know, that is sort of welcome news, and you would probably wonder why something like that hadn't been done, you know, a couple of years ago. Just checking on the club's website and seeing the lineup of who's on it. I mean, we have several local politicians at council level and also at Oireachtas level. One of the interesting aspects of this working group is that Brendan Ogle is on it, who is co-chair, I think, or he may be, no, he's chair with Andrea as vice chair of the newly formed independent supporters group. I think that potentially is really interesting, because if this was just club officials and local politicians, that would be better than nothing. But I think with a fan voice around that table, you've got an opportunity to really ask the questions that fans want answered. And, you know, we there's work that needs to be done there. I mean, there's all sorts of, there's a melange of legal questions about who owns the ground, who owns the ground, the area adjacent to the ground on each side, what sort of, you know, planning permission is obtainable, what you can do with that space. Like, we do have a lot of physical space around about Oriel Park. It's a much bigger area, for example, than Tallaght Stadium. And we know that Tallaght Stadium is a really fine stadium. So, you know, that's welcome news. Look, we'll be wishing Brendan and Damian Mackin, who are the supporters club representatives on that about body, we'll be wishing them the best of luck and hoping that they can sort of drive that whole project forward and make sure it stays on the straight and narrow. Because, I mean, yeah, we've had some good nights in Tallaght, but I think we mentioned before, you know, there was a major sense of achievement in Dundalk when we became, you know, capable of hosting our own European ties, and you didn't have to go to Daly Mount Park anymore. I think, you know, fun and all as we've had, you know, playing Batty and stuff in Tallaght, it is an awful shame that these European games have not been hosted in Dundalk in a stadium befitting those occasions.
I think it's worth pointing out that, you know, Category 3, I don't want to pour cold water on this, but Category 3 is relatively unambitious in that it doesn't allow you to host qualifying round games in European competition, and it certainly doesn't allow you to host group games. The minimum seated capacity for a Category 3 is 4,500. And so I'm not sure what the seated capacity in Oriel Park currently is, but it's, you know, probably, I think, something like 3,200 or something like that. So I think like a relatively small number of additional seats almost brings us up to that. So I think it'd be really interesting to see like more of the detail about exactly what the working group intends to achieve. I think if we're looking at fulfilling like all of the club's dreams of actually being able to host, you know, regular European games, that the likes of which we've seen over the past few seasons in the town, this objective doesn't deliver on that at the moment. But like I said, there might be many good things that it does deliver on. It could be, you know, sort of what would you say, covered seated capacity for, you know, all areas of the ground in which there's supporters and stuff like that, which I still think would be a big improvement. And I think one thing that has rankled with people like for various years, including club officials, is the like the inability to produce food in the ground and that kind of thing, and the sort of availability of that kind of service is just like distinctly lacking at the moment. Not to talk down the single van or anything like that, which is obviously wonderful, but you know, there's I don't know. I think the devil will be in the detail, but it'll be interesting to see what the actual plans that emerge are.
As a supporter, as personally speaking, one of my few demands would be that the Singley van is involved. I mean, I don't want to be involved in a stadium, Category 3 or not, built, especially with public money involved. If the Singley van is not allowed in the gates, then I want nothing to do with it. But I mean, I think in the midst of all this negativity and stuff, it's somewhat positive sign. Any sign of movement or any sign of movement towards better facilities for the club is to be applauded. I mean, me personally, I've always been a fan of redeveloping Oriel rather than moving to a greenfield site. A huge worry I have is where they would choose to put a greenfield site. I think if it's in any way further away from the town centre, you're in huge trouble. I was always opposed to anything out of DKIT. I think that would have massive negative consequences on crowds and the culture around the club. So I would say a greenfield site development really would depend on location. But listen, it's a working group. When I see politicians involved, especially some of the politicians involved, my eyebrow raises up through the roof. But great to see, I think, fan involvement in that working group. Like Brendan, I think that's hugely important. I think they really have to get fans on side on any development. I suppose it's good to see politicians because, okay, they can, you know, rattle cages at government for money, but I think this has to be fan-led rather than politician and businessman-led, because politicians and businessmen don't tend to make the best decisions, I find, in favour of football fans.
Yeah, no, we all know that, you know, there's, like, basically the stadium development probably required something like this. It costs you nothing to form a group. And as a politician, it costs you nothing to be associated with the club, because we all know that, you know, that's a route to visibility and whatever. But to be a little bit more, as a little bit more of a litmus test, I mean, obviously, right, the way in which you get stadiums developed around about here is you access Department of Sport money. You see if you can access local funding. You see if you can access funding from other sources. But ultimately, you've got to kind of fundraise or put up money yourself. Now, PSEX could build us, you know, anything. They could, like, they have a substantial amount of capital behind them. That's the only reason that they're potentially of any use to us, rather than their footballing wisdom, which has proven to be, you know, something of a disease in the club. Ultimately, you know, this is encouraging, but I'll be a great deal more encouraged when we see basically the colour of their money, and we see money on the table. When we hear announcements that, you know, there is joint funding available from the Department of Sport to the tune of X amount of million. It would also seem to be, like, as Martin says, you know, perhaps a lost opportunity if this is a newly redeveloped stadium in which we can still only play one or two European ties before we then have to up sticks and go off to Tala again. It should not be beyond the bounds. Like, I mean, perhaps, you know, if you get to the group stages, you'll always have to go to the Aviva. Fair enough. We worry about that when we get there. But I mean, I think Tala Stadium is a great model for what a League of Ireland ground can be. I think Daly Mount Park has proven time and time again the value of having a stadium that's in an urban centre rather than in a suburb or even, you know, outside of a town. I think with Oriel, I think it's, you know, it's a perfect position. It's the place that everybody, you know, associates with the club. There is room around it. Something can be done there. Something needs to be done there. Let's just wish this group the best of luck in the work they're about to undertake. But like I say, we'll be a lot more optimistic when we see the colour of the money that's involved in this. Well, a frenetic week for Dundalk FC. Just got more frenetic there with that stadium working group announcement. But look, let's hope for the best, and we'll take the positives out of it. We have a tricky tie against Treaty United. It's not often that you play a new club for the first time. But that cup tie, you know, it's pretty important for, as we've said, the European prospects, and it can't be taken for granted, particularly coming between a European tie. But hopefully it's an opportunity for players maybe like Sean Murray and Wilfried Zahibo to work on their match fitness and perhaps, you know, see us through to the next round before we head off to Tallinn the following Thursday, where the prize is, financially at least, much greater. Doubtless we'll be back for another episode on Sunday. And we'll be talking about the Treaty game, where hopefully we'll be continuing our long tradition now at this stage of making it to the final in the Aviva Stadium over the last few years. Until then, I'd like to thank our contributors, Rory Murphy, Martin Mullen, and Damien Kenny. I'd like to thank you guys for listening and contributing on Twitter. We'll be back then on Sunday to talk about the Treaty game. Take the ball.